Welcome, everyone, to our introduction to the Dance of Partnership. And I'm really excited about this. So the full title is The Dance of Partnership, The Secrets of Accomplishment with Ease. And to give you an overview of what we're going to be doing tonight, I'm first going to talk about the relationship between our work on gender and partnership. How did we get here? And talk a little bit about what is partnership and the need to learn, why the need to learn partnership. And then I'm going to talk about the 14 elements of partnership that we've identified so far. So I'm not eliminating it, that there could be a lot more, but this is what we've been working with now going into our seventh season of core partnership. And I'll be giving a short description of the first 11 of them. And then, as I said in the email that went out about this call, I'll be talking more at length about the last set of distinctions, which we call clarity, consistency, and appreciation. So I'll be talking about what we normally do and the result that that causes, and then what happens with clarity, consistency, and appreciation, and how we address that in the workshop, The Dance of Partnership. And lastly, I'll talk about the course itself and do we actually dance, or is that a metaphor? And whether or not, you know, you need to come with a partner and what areas of life this could affect. And then I'll give you a promotional code which will allow you to get a free gift. So if you register into the Dance of Partnership with our promotional code, then you get a free copy of the teleclass Money, Men, and Mischief, which explores the human instincts that we have around money that keeps us out of partnership. And last but not least, I will take your questions. So I'm going to be rocking and rolling here for a while. Let me pause to take a drink or catch my breath. But we have a really full agenda, and I'm excited to give you as much as I can. One of the things I'm toying with is a teleclass on the elements of partnership, and tonight's a bit of an experiment. We'll see, can we actually convey a set of the distinctions over the phone? Or do we need to be in person and have the physical mechanisms that we've set up? So let me just dive right into here. So many people are familiar with my work. Most people are familiar with my work in the area of gender. So distinguishing between male and female, times masculine and feminine. So what happens when you have, for example, a masculine man versus a masculine woman? Those aren't the same things. And femininity expresses itself differently in men and in women. And there's, you know, the absolute ends of male and female, or what I would call testosterone versus estrogen-based organisms. And there's absolute ends of masculine and feminine. And most of us fall somewhere in between. And, you know, it's been my passion since 1991 to explore all these different things that happened when you get male and female times masculine and feminine together. And because mostly what happens isn't pretty. There's a lot of suffering. There's a lot of anger and disappointment and frustration and the sense of being not seen, not known, not respected, not loved for who you really are, and enormous failures in understanding and communication. And I love that work. It's endlessly fascinating to me, and I don't imagine that I'll ever stop doing it. And to me, that work isn't the point. To me, understanding what I would call the predicament of gender, understanding that, the point of it is so that we can partner. Because all of those misunderstandings trash partnership. They kill ongoing partnerships, new partnerships. They prevent partnerships. they take something lovely and send it right down the toilet, and they prevent really beautiful, sustainable, continually growing and getting ever richer partnerships from evolving, because those misunderstandings take us out again and again. So for me, my work on gender has always been so that we could be in partnership and so that we could empower ourselves and empower each other and stop disempowering ourselves and each other and get together on the same team, which is actually one of the definitions of partnership, being on the same side or team. And when you don't know the difference, for example, between single focus and diffuse awareness, it looks like the other person is purposely trying to aggravate and frustrate and thwart you, and so you can't be on the same team. So that's just an example of really what all my work in gender has to do with partnership. Now, there's this really interesting thing, though, is I thought if we could clear out all the gender junk and develop some skills for understanding and having compassion for each other and relating to each other and communicating with each other and getting what we need from each other, that then partnership would just be a natural outcome. And I was wrong. And I don't mind being wrong. It happens to me fairly often. I learn something new about men and women and realize, oh my gosh, I had that all wrong. And I'm kind of used to that, and it makes me humble and keeps me curious. But to be wrong about partnership was really it's hard for me, and it was costly for me, because partnership is for people who can't accomplish what they're committed to on their own. And people who are very self-sufficient and independent, they don't need partnership. And in fact, self-sufficiency and independence precludes partnership. It's the opposite of partnership. So one of the definitions, like I already said, of partnership is people on the same side or team. Another definition from the dictionary is people engaged in an enterprise sharing its profits and risks. And that's a definition that we use in our Celebrating Partnership CD set, because a lot of the work is to define the enterprise. And, you know, so I did a lot of work on partnership up until 8 years ago, actually. 8 years ago is when I met Michelle Skirl. And I met her by virtue of moving in up the street. And street might have you picture buildings and libraries and 7-Elevens and Walmarts and what like that. But where we live up the street, there are no curbs. There are no curbs in our roads. Not all the roads are paved. And we're in western rural Colorado. And Michelle trains horses, and she's an extraordinary horse trainer. And she also teaches horsemanship, which she is passionate about. And I have a congenital love of horses, and I asked to go into training with Michelle because I'd had a really bad spill and was afraid to ride and wanted to recover that because I'd never been afraid of horses before. And as Michelle was teaching me how to relate to my horse, much in the same way that I teach women how to relate to men. Like, what if you understand the instincts of a horse and work with them to create connection and a partner to create something more beautiful than either horse or human could do individually? What if you worked with how they were put together? And that was the beginning of falling in love with Michelle, to find out that her approach to horses is the same as my approach to men and women. And as she taught me to partner, her name was Violet, was the horse she assigned to me, I was stunned. I was stunned that it was the best leadership training and team training that I'd ever experienced. And I've had the privilege of participating in some extraordinary trainings. And that was the beginning of me working with Michelle to take what she was doing with horses and find the way to articulate it for human beings, so that these extraordinary partnerships she was creating with these magnificent four-legged beings, that we could translate in that into what men and women could do with each other. And I don't just mean romantically, by the way. I specifically don't mean just romantically. I'm interested in partnership in every context, whether it's work or community or spiritual or religious or families. I've been raising my children in an experiment of parenting in partnership, and I partner with my kids, and all three of them are now might be considered grown, two of them quite launched. But that was where this all started, and it's relevant because you might have noticed if you spend time with me that I don't share the stage with very many people. And it's not so much out of arrogance as that I design courses out of my experience and who I am, and they're an expression of who I am. And so I get up there and lead it. But Michelle continues to be my partner and my mentor. She continues to be someone that I learn from. And so for me to bring you the best of what I can give you in the area of partnership means I'm going to bring you Michelle Skrull. And not just Michelle and her brilliance, her intuitiveness, her kinesthetic sense, her view of the world that comes from her first language being, we tease her first language is horse, English is a second language. So this amazing perspective that she has and compassion and commitment to truth and acceptance, which all factor in, but also who Michelle and I are together, because we are not just a demonstration of partnership, but an experiment of partnership. And we live very much out loud in our partnership and continually validate that partnership is not for wusses. Partnership is challenging. Partnership is messy. It's not this happily ever after fantasy. Partnership is actually a whole world. So what I mean by that is that partnership is, you could call it a domain if you wanted to. You could call it a paradigm, if that's a word that you're used to. A paradigm being a construct that has particular rules or precepts and naturally produces particular results. So every paradigm has results that naturally fall out of it, and every paradigm has results that it disallows. So I don't think there's such a thing as a perfect paradigm or a single paradigm that we should always operate in. But partnership itself is a paradigm, and it has a set of principles, and it has some really amazing outcomes, things that we can't accomplish on our own. And it's tremendously risky. You can't be safe and be in partnership because of what it requires. And it's really a commitment to engagement. It's a commitment to relating to other people in a way that honors both you and them. And that's extremely rare for human beings. Human instinct is naturally adversarial and has a tendency to validate you or me, not you and me. And partnership is a commitment to you and me and to treating us both with honor, even when we're not the same, even when we don't agree, even when we don't even understand what the other person needs or what the other person's experiencing. So many of you know I've been paying attention to human instincts for a long time, since 1991, and have identified what I would call primal or primitive or core human instincts, and then looked at how those are expressed in male and female and in masculine and feminine. What are the expressions of those instincts? And one of the things that I can tell you is that I have yet to discover a single human instinct that pulls for partnership. I haven't found one. I haven't found a single human instinct that pulls for partnership. In fact, every instinct that I can see actually pulls away from partnership. And some people might think that can't be possible, right? The feminine instinct that has us feel safe when we feel connected, that must be a partner instinct, connection, right? Actually, no. There's an element of partnership called connection, but it's not achieved the way that human instinct would go about it. The human, especially female instinct for connection, causes a loss of self, and the presence of self and the power of self and the honor of self and the strengthening of self is integral to partnership. So that human instinct for connection actually will pull away from partnership, just as an example. So since no instinct pulls for partnership, partnership has to be learned, and that's really, oh my gosh, let's just be frank, that's just a pain in the butt. It's just annoying. It's annoying to have to learn something that so much depends upon. You know, if you're up to something really big, whether it's in your business or in your family or in your relationship or in your community, if you're up to something really big, then you need partnership. And then that creates a problem because partnership isn't normal. Partnership isn't instinctive. Partnership isn't automatic. Partnership is something that you have to learn, and I'll say more about that, and you have to practice. You have to engage in. You have to keep choosing. So in learning partnership, what we've discovered is there are all these different levels or ways that you have to learn partnership. So you have to learn partnership conceptually or mentally, right? You have to wrap your head around the way that it works. Just like if you were going to, you know, take a car apart to find out how it works, you have to do the same thing with partnership. You got to understand in a mental construct how partnership works. And then on top of that, you have to learn how partnership works conversationally. So there's your individual understanding of partnership and that can be conveyed in thought, but then how does that translate into a conversation with another human being, into an interaction with another human being? How do you talk partnership, if you will? How do you listen partnership, if you will? How do you express things in partnership that is different than human instinct would have us normally express things? So we have to learn it conceptually and or mentally, and we have to learn it conversationally, so the talking out of it. And then there's another level of partnership that we need to learn, and that's that we need to embody partnership. So partnership isn't just a way of thinking and a way of speaking and a way of listening. Partnership is also a way of being. And the embodiment of it, the feeling of partnership, the sense of in your body who you're being as a partner or an opening for partnership is critical, because you can think it and you can speak it, but if you're not being it, oh my gosh, none of the rest works, because we're much more sensitive than we know ourselves to be. And science is proving this over and over these days, how much we're sensitive to how the other person is being, that we actually, our brain is registering somebody else's heart rate, somebody else's depth of breathing, the level of tension that they have in their body. We can pick up on all these minute indicators of somebody being for or against us, with us or seriously without us. And so the embodiment of partnership is as important, if not more important, actually probably more important than the concept and the conversation. So as many of you know, CORE Partnership, which is the first program that Michelle and I designed together, really focuses on the embodiment of the elements of partnership. And you work with both Michelle and I and your own horse each day. Because what's great is the horses are not auditory. So they're not going to pay attention to your conversation. They don't really care about your conversation, which means they can't be manipulated or cajoled or convinced by your conversation. Even your tone of voice or the volume of your voice means very little to them. So they are kinesthetic beings, and they're responding to who you're being. So when you're embodying partnership, they respond very quickly, very powerfully, very visibly to you being partnership. And that's what we work on for those 4 days in CORE. But not everybody can get here to Colorado to do CORE Partnership. And what we found is we need all of this. We need both the concept, the conversation, and the embodiment. So Michelle and I created the Dance of Partnership to provide an environment for people who've done CORE and people who may never do CORE to learn the elements of partnership conceptually, to practice the elements of partnership conversationally, and to begin to embody the elements of partnership. So it works very differently than when we're with the horses, but we have been delighted to see how effective we can be, even in the area of embodiment, while interacting with each other without the horses. So the Dance of Partnership, which is a metaphor, because partnership is a dance, and sometimes we're rocking and rolling, and sometimes we're swinging around the room and ecstatic, and sometimes we're stepping on each other's feet. As a metaphor, it's risky, and it's fun, and it's exciting, and it has all kinds of adventures with it. So it's the metaphor, but it's also we use partner dancing to practice the concepts and the conversation of partnership, and you will have these moments where you actually feel it in your body and that embodiment begins to show up. So don't worry about the dance. No, there is no rock and roll. There isn't even any music. People often want us to play music in a dance of partnership, and we don't because it's a distraction. It's a distraction from paying attention to your partner. It's a distraction from paying attention to the element you're working on. It's a distraction from being present to the conversation and the embodiment of partnership. So there's no music at Dance of Partnership unless you start humming, which we actually had people do that, which is pretty cute. So having set you all up with that, what I want to do now is just briefly introduce you to the first 11 elements of partnership, and then we're really going to tease out for you much more the last three, as I promised. So, okay, I got to take a breath here. Gosh, I love partnership. I feel so fortunate to have worked on it for so long that it's actually I have to pay attention to when somebody isn't in partnership with me, when I'm interacting with an adversary, because I so come from partnership now, it takes me a moment to realize that that would be foolish to interact with this person as a partner. They're actually an adversary. But I really like that problem instead of the opposite. So these different elements that I'm about to tell you about, they come in sets because they have a relationship to each other. And so they're both distinct and they have a relationship with each other. So the first set is space and connection. And that's actually where we'll begin in the Dance of Partnership. And we begin there here at CORE as well. And space has to do with your space, your physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual and temporal, as in time, space. And what we say is space equals self. So if you collapse your space, then you collapse yourself. You're diminished yourself. And owning space, holding space, clearing out what's inside your space, paying attention to what you keep in your space instead of allowing to escape your space, these are all different concepts that we talk about in the Dance of Partnership. And as you learn more and more to hold your space, you literally become invincible. What I'm working on now is actually it not being possible to hurt my feelings or to emasculate me just by virtue of holding my space. That is my frontier now of holding my space. And it's very, very exciting. And wherever you start, we have somewhere for you to go. So that's the first part, space, and then the second part, connection. So instinct would have, especially women, believe that you can't have space and connection, that connection means the elimination of space, that what we need to do is be physically, emotionally, and mentally and spiritually close. We need to be so, so close. Let's get closer. In fact, let's get so close that one of us disappears into the other. So the feminine instinct is for the elimination of space, the collapsing of space, thinking that that's going to create a greater connection. And it actually doesn't, because space equals self. And if you collapse your space, there's no self with which to connect. And some of us, what we do is we try to collapse other people's space. We actually seek to get close or to succeed or to dominate by annihilating another person's self. And that makes partnership impossible. And it gives you no one to participate with. And so space and connection is about holding your space and being a demand that other people hold theirs, that they not collapse on you. And we work with that quite physically in the dancing, because you soon see that you can't make anything happen unless somebody is maintaining themselves. There's nothing to be done. There's nowhere to go. You're on your own. You're self-sufficient, independent, because there's no one over there. And you become a demand that other people not collapse their space. The next set is trust, pressure, and release. And I love the work that we do on this in the Dance of Partnership. Most people, and human instinct is would pay attention to this, most people are working on can I trust him, can I trust her, trying to find someone that they can trust, trying to learn how to trust somebody. Since our work is really all about what's in your control, what you have something to do with, what we're focused on is, are you trustworthy? That people will not accept the invitation to partner with you if you're not trustworthy. And one of the things that has people convince people that they're not trustworthy is that their pressure is unpredictable. So I'm not talking about their personality. I'm not talking about their tone of voice or their intensity. I'm actually talking about pressure. There's a pressure. There's pressure inside of each of us, and we emit pressure that other people can feel. And when we're irresponsible about that, we actually can have a couple of things happen. And one is that we scare people. They just never know what's going to happen, and so they don't trust us. Or some people don't emit enough pressure to register on other people's radar. So people who feel like they're never heard are people who usually are not emitting enough pressure to register. And then the third part of that is the release of pressure. So human beings and horses both, and I'm sure a lot of other critters, learn by the release of pressure. So one of the ways you can see that is if you think of yourself as a child, and if you think of your mother or your father, having pressure, putting pressure on you to do something or to be a certain way or respond to them in a certain way. And as children, we figure out how to get our parents to release their pressure, to lower their pressure. And by the way, this is how all women learn how to emasculate men, because that causes a lowering of your pressure. And some of us become funny because that releases pressure. Some of us tell people whatever they want to hear because then they release their pressure. Some of us get angry because that causes someone to back off. Some of us withdraw because that causes people to back off. For the human brain, it only has to work 3 times to be locked in as a way to survive, as a way to do your life. So the release of pressure is how people learn, and we need to know how to release our pressure so that people can not only learn, but they can also think, and they can be, and they can respond from themselves, from their own volition, not just in order to get us to release our pressure. The next set is imagination and resistance. And how we get to work with these in core partnership to me is extraordinarily fun, because horses are telepathic. And whatever you're picturing in your mind, they can see it. And when you're working with the horses and they give you a 1,000-pound representation of your imagination, you find out how sloppy we are with our imaginations, how imprecise we are with our imaginations, and how much we imagine what we don't want. We rarely imagine what we do want. Most people imagine what they don't want. And then that goes into the second element of resistance. So you could call it, if you wanted to, negative resistance or positive resistance. Negative resistance is what we create by imagining what we don't want and then getting ready to overcome it. So imagining a no when we need a yes, imagining a no, and then strategizing how we're going to overcome that no. It makes who we're being very weird. It makes us adversarial. It gives off a very bad vibe. And it'll have somebody say no just on principle. That what you're saying is fine, but how you're being is ew. So we actually create resistance to ourselves when we don't mean to, by how imprecise we are with our imagination. Now, there's also positive resistance. So partnership requires resistance. And human instinct is all about overcoming resistance. So again, it pulls in opposite direction. We need resistance because resistance is a way of holding space. It's a form of maintaining self. It's expressing what you need when someone else might not be happy with that. Expressing your view, your conclusions, your knowledge, to contribute it to the ultimate result, instead of just agreeing with someone, and now you have the intelligence of one person instead of two. So we work with this in dance. We don't have telepathic horses, but you can imagine. You start imagining really how you would like it to go, instead of being afraid that you're going to step on people's feet, and imagining that you're going to step on their feet and then getting all wrapped up in that. So there's plenty of opportunities for imagination and resistance in dance. The next set is authenticity and honor. And I'm going to be referring to this when I talk about clarity, consistency, and appreciation. So we'll be saying some more stuff about this. But authenticity and honor is the combination that I can most easily express by saying we honor our partners when we tell them our truth. Authenticity and honor. So we honor our partners by revealing what matters the most to us, revealing what's true for us, revealing what we really need. Another way of saying it is revealing our heart's desire. Another way of saying that would be, how do you score 100 points? Don't just tell me, you know, what do you like, and I can get 4 points. I want to know what would blow your mind. I want to know what would move you to tears. I want to know what would make your heart sing. So So when you honor me with the information that allows me to win big with you, that's extraordinary and creates whole new possibilities in partnerships. The next set is accountability and entrust. Many people, most people have a disempowering relationship to accountability. Our whole society has a disempowering relationship to accountability. too often, sorry, I was thinking about one of my favorite terms. Some of you will find out that you are an accountability hog or an accountability hoe. And I say that very tongue-in-cheek because what's normal for the masculine, which most women are very masculine, is to be accountable. And it's a beautiful thing, accountability, except for when we're being accountable for everything and we don't leave any accountability for anybody else. And that's typical for women. Is to be accountable for everything that we see that isn't perfect. And whereas men will be more selective in their accountabilities. So accountability is a big area of losing, of even heartbreak, where you've got to be accountable for something that was a privilege to be accountable for, and then it wasn't entrusted to you. They just pretended that you were accountable, but they didn't give you the power. They didn't give you the resources. They didn't actually entrust it to you. They didn't let it go into your hands so that you could produce that result. So there's a lot of pain around an accountability, and there's a lot of misunderstanding about the phenomenon of entrusting an accountability. So mostly what we have are micromanagers, and we have abandonment, who just hand off an accountability and walk away. Don't make sure it's in that person set up to win. So one of the things that you'll hear in the dance of partnership is that a partnership is limited and expanded by what the partners are being accountable for. And that's, it's a short sentence, but there's a whole world in there. And partnerships grow as what people are being accountable for grows. And there's some really beautiful things you can be accountable for that just that will completely transform how you're relating to the people you care about the most. Okay, so this brings us into the last set. So I've told you 11 of the 14 so far. Ay, ay, ay. Let me just breathe for a moment. I feel each one of those elements. I'm so in love with them. And in core partnership, we work with them a bit at a time until you get them in your body and you've experienced them with your horse. And then on the last day, they all come together into this beautiful expression that has you know that you can do this. And we do that as well in a dance of partnership. It's a different expression, but it's really quite beautiful. So let me talk about the last three elements, which are clarity, consistency, and appreciation. So clarity, comma, consistency, and appreciation. So first let me talk about what normally happens. What normally happens is people try to get things done through criticism. That's how we try to accomplishment. That's how we try to accomplish, is through criticism. So somebody does something and it's not exactly how we want it, or it's not close to how we want it. And so what we do is we tell them what's wrong with it. And we often have an attitude that goes with the communication, like, why did you do that? Or why didn't you do that? Or what were you thinking? Everybody knows it should be like this. And, you know, we think we're motivating them to work harder to get it right, that we're, you know, straightening them out, we're training them, we're improving them. Some of us really think we're doing a favor to people that we criticize, you know, because if we let them know what's wrong with them, then they can fix it and they'll be better off. And wouldn't it be great if it worked? But near as we can tell, criticism never works. it doesn't work for men and it doesn't work for women. Criticism causes distance. You don't want to be intimate. You don't want to be connected to someone who's criticizing you. So criticism will disrupt partnership. It's discouraging. The opposite of encouraging, right? So in the face of criticism, we don't take risks. We don't become brave. We don't get bigger. We don't put more effort in. It actually has us want to do less, for sure risk less, less of ourselves, less of our energy, less of our resources. We don't try harder. We stop trying. And it causes a loss of energy and drive, causes the conclusion, I can't win here. Why should I play? I can't win. And I listened to men and women for years talk about the effects of criticism and what it does to them. And it's the funniest thing about being human. Both men and women can go on and on and on about how much they hate criticism and then turn around and criticize somebody. thinking still it should work, even though it doesn't work on them. It's pretty funny, actually. It's also really sad. So what we propose in the elements of partnership is the possibility of accomplishing something without any criticism, not even a hint of criticism. And what I mean by a hint of criticism would be something like, you know, you were great. You were awesome. You mostly didn't step on my feet. That's sneaky criticism, right? You're trying to nudge them, you know, to change and do something different. Don't step on my feet. You stepped on my feet. You know, but trying to put it in a positive light. So we're talking about accomplishing with something without a hint of criticism, not any, not even a flavor, not even an attitude of criticism. And but let me tell you what normally happens, okay? So let's talk about this in order. So clarity, meaning you're clear about what you need. You're clear about what you're asking for. And clarity requires authenticity because mostly people stay safe and they choose from a list of options that they think are available. They don't take a big risk and come out and say what it is that really matters to them if they're not sure that it's available. So clarity requires authenticity. So this is the way that they're tied together. And then consistency of clarity. So we've all had examples where someone was really clear about what they wanted, but then the next day they wanted something else. And the day after that they wanted something else. So clarity is awesome, but if you're not consistent in what you're clear about, in other words, if you keep changing your mind, then you actually train people to not act. You train people to not do what you're talking about because it's going to be a waste of energy because tomorrow you're going to change your mind. Now, this often happens, again, when you're choosing from the menu, when you're perfectly clear but inauthentic. You're perfectly clear about something that was only like a 4 for you. It wasn't a 10. It was just a 4. So we don't invest ourselves in ones and twos and threes and fours, even probably fives and sixes. We change our mind because it's not really it. It's not really our heart's desire. And we create a lot of confusion and inaction and frustration by not being consistent in what we're clear about. Then there's the last part. So this is a bridge here. So it's clarity, consistency, and appreciation. So a consistency of clarity, but also a consistency of appreciation with what you're clear about. In other words, if you ask for one thing and appreciate something else, if you're not consistent, then you also confuse people, frustrate people, hurt people, disrespect people. You can really drive people crazy. And one of my favorite examples of this is something that women do, and they don't even know they're doing it. And it sounds a little like this. you know, a man will ask a woman, you know, his wife, for example, what she wants for her birthday. And maybe if she's done one of our courses, she won't be offended by that, that he doesn't love me enough to have figured it out. She'll actually realize that that's a very courteous thing to ask, very considerate. Instead of projecting onto her, he's going to have her have a say. And then she might actually say, she might cough up the information, you know, that what she wants for her birthday. And so he gets her what she said she wanted for her birthday. And a typical reaction will be, but you didn't wrap it. So now he knows, okay, I got to get her what she wants for her birthday, but what really matters is the wrapping. So maybe what's inside doesn't matter so much, but I won't forget that wrapping. So he gets her a present, and he wraps it, and he hands it to her, and she says, but where's the card? Like, oh, okay, so I gotta wrap it, but I don't give her any points for wrapping. And I also have to have a card. And so by now what's inside is really, I don't know if it really matters, but we got to have something, and we got to wrap it, and then we got to get a card. So he's really going to get it this time. So he gets a present. He gets it wrapped or wraps it himself. That's always such an amazing thing. And then he gets a card, and he leaves it on the nightstand on her birthday so she can wake up to this surprise of him having gotten everything that she asked for. And he comes home at night, and it's still sitting there. And he says, honey, there's your present and your card. Why didn't you open it? And she says, well, because you weren't here to watch me. To which a man will respond, but I already know what it is. So this is an example of a lack of consistency between appreciation and clarity. And this is one of the things that we work on in Dance of Partnership, where you have a chance to express your heart's desire in what the provider is going to provide for you. Because we don't have leaders and followers. We have providers and receivers. And the receiver gets to say their heart's desire, and we go through a whole process. It's very carefully orchestrated. You don't have to keep track of it. Where you undertake to provide this thing, and you have several tries to provide it, and you're never criticized. Never, ever, ever criticized. Each time is just a process of clarity and appreciation. That's all that's provided, is clarity and appreciation. No criticism whatsoever. And you get to see what happens. We actually have you experience the difference, what happens with criticism and what happens with clarity and appreciation. And it's extraordinary. It's so visual because you're dancing. And the dancing has become lovely. Even if you hate dancing, even if you're afraid of dancing, even if you think dancing is terrible, within a very short time in the Dance of Partnership, not only will you be good at it, but you'll win at it. And you can certainly come to enjoy it and look forward to it, and you may even do it in your life afterwards, because it's really, really special. Oh my gosh, I made it here. Okay, so I'm going to give you a few details about being in the course, and then I'm going to take your questions. So please start thinking if you have a question that you'd like to have answered that would help you decide whether or not this is a place for you. And because as we say, partnership's not for everybody. It's messy. It requires courage. you got to be willing to boogie and take risks. And that's also true about the course. Now, it's also a whole heck of a lot of fun. And you get to see something beautiful emerge that a single human being could never have accomplished. So Michelle and I are leading the Dance of Partnership twice this year, and that's typical. We try to move it around the country. On May 2nd and 3rd, we're leading it in Los Angeles. And on November 14th and 15th, we're leading it in New York City. And we try to release the schedule so that there's always two in the schedule, so we'll be having a spring one next year. Now, if you register into a a dance of partnership, we have a what's called a promotional code. So what that means is you would go to our website and you would put the dance of partnership, whichever date you want, into your shopping cart, and either a paid in full or you can use a payment plan. And then you would also go to our teleclasses and you would put Money, Men, and Mischief in there. And that's the teleclass, like I said, that will distinguish the human instincts around money that keep us out of partnerships and kill our partnerships. And we want you to have that because they go together. So you put both of those into your shopping cart, and then when you go to check out, you're going to see a part that says use a gift / promo code. So it'll say use a gift / promo code, and what you're going to put in is DP2015. So DP as in dance of partnership, dance and partnership, D like dog, P like pig. So DP2015, and then press the update button. And what that will do is take off the $97 that you would ordinarily pay for Money, Men, and Mischief. All right, so that's how you would register into the course. And what I want to do now is see if you have any questions that you'd like to have answered to help you make up your mind about whether or not this is for you. Carl, I see your hand up, and you have a microphone.
Hey, Allison, this is Carl. We met in Maui. I'm the race car driver.
Oh, hello, my dear. Good to hear your voice.
Here from you, I sure would like to take your husband for a ride at speed when he gives me a call.
Okay.
So I'm here with my wife, Claudia, just like Claudia in the book. And I had a question about the dance of partnership. Is it most effective as a couple, or is it also effective individually?
Well, there's a couple of different takes on that. People can come to dance of partnership with or without a partner. And if you come with a partner, we actually have you avoid dancing with each other until all the elements come together. Because what we found is we have a lot invested in our romantic counterparts learning things, right? And even if we have business partners come, we would have them not dance until the end because we tend to learn much better when we don't have that pressure of someone who really is attached to us learning. And so if you do come with someone, we don't have you dance together until the end. And it's actually really cool to see what happens. It's really special. But,
cool.
Dance is fine to come either way. Core, I actually recommend couples not do together.
Okay. And is this a weekend course, a two-day course?
Yep. It's a Saturday and a Sunday.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks, Carl. All right, and let me see if we have, I don't have any other hands up with questions, and I do have a few more minutes. So if you'd like to ask something and you might be a little nervous or think it might be a silly question, I promise I don't make fun of anybody. And, very good. Okay, Katie, you have the microphone.
Hi, Allison.
Hi.
I have two questions. My first question is the cost. How much is the course? And the second question is, it's, to me in my head it sounds like it's silly, but I know it's not. So the course would be for those of us that are single, correct? It's not necessarily a course for someone that already is in partnership?
Well, we actually don't distinguish between the two. Because this isn't just about romantic partnership. This is about partnership in business and community, in all sizes of organizations. It's even about partnership within your family. So we've had sisters come together. We've had, I don't know if we've had a mother and son yet, but we definitely have family relationships. We have people who work together. We have people who are on teams together. So there's nothing romantic at all. They just are on a team trying to produce something together. And so it's not just for singles, and it's not just for romantic partners. It's for both. It's about a way of being in all of life, not just in romantic relationships. And the tuition for the course is $1,295, or you can use a payment plan as 7 payments of $191. And some people wonder, because our normal rate for our workshops is about $425 a day, so that would normally make it $850. But this workshop is really limited in size, and it has extra expenses because we have to get extra big rooms so that you all have room to dance. Because as you get better and better at it, some of you really start moving and twirling, and it's quite extraordinary. So does that answer your question?
It does. Thank you. So I know you said earlier that the course is offered twice a year. So next year, would it be still in Los Angeles, or do you switch to other cities?
We move around every year. We've been in L.A., we've been in Edmonton, we've been in San Francisco. I predict that sometime next year we'll be back in Dallas. And I don't know where the second course is. I'd really like to end up in Atlanta or something like that. But our courses are sponsored by the PAX communities. They ask us to come do it there, and so it's up to them to step forth and put it on. And that's why we have Los Angeles and New York this year.
I see. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you, Katie. All right, so I'm going to leave you back with something that I said in the beginning, and that's the question, are you committed to accomplishing something that you can't accomplish on your own? In other words, do you need partnership? And I think that's a question we all have to answer. Do we need partnership? Because that's who this course is for, and that's what makes it worth it to go through everything that you're going to go through as you wrestle with all 14 of those elements and getting them both into your mind and into your conversations and to begin to get them into your body. So thank you all very much for being with me tonight. I appreciate your listening and the opportunity to express something that matters so much to me.